Who is this? It's like, you know, when you put a visor on Kevin James, all of a sudden you can't recognize him. Oh, wait a second. We're going to talk about that a little later, aren't we?
What a
Hello,
segue into
everyone.
the
I'm Izzy
show.
Gutierrez. Welcome to Debatable. That's Sarah Spade. That's Bill Barnwell. There's some serious stuff today, some non-serious stuff today, but I think we have to have music first. I believe is the way this works. Hey.
ABC show set in a high school.
It reminds me of the song Brave by, I think, Sarah Burrell. Is how do you say her name?
Yes.
That's the song. I
You could be
can't
amazing.
unhear
You
it.
could be a something. You could be that one. Yeah,
It's a great
totally.
song.
It is a great
If
song.
there was like a Muppet Babies version of Succession, this would be the
Sarah Bareilles would 100% do the song for it, so it's all
theme
coming together.
Exactly. We have a lot to talk about today.
You mentioned Succession real quick. Was this the season finale this past weekend?
I haven't started it yet, not, and I don't
No,
mean
the
the
only thing.
finale, I mean the whole series.
The
I'm
only thing that
waiting.
you need to spoil is that season three has 9 episodes, which doesn't make any sense to me. Why just not make a 10th episode? But that's clearly a debate for another time.
Easy, it can't be fit into your easy little boxes of 10. It's
They cut
art.
5 minutes off of each of the other episodes. They could have all made it a 10th episode, but
Yeah,
again.
you're in sports now.
Well, you know how like in Britain, like a Britain, like a season is like 6 episodes long. Like it feels like they just wanted to go a little beyond that. Like they didn't want to make it seem like a British show. But like it could have gone
All
like
right,
an
Charlie,
episode.
what do we have?
All right, guys, our first topic was the reaction to Steph Curry's 3-point record a bit of overkill?
All right, real quick, before we start getting opinions, what's the number? What's the 3-point number that he broke, Sarah?
Nine four something.
Close, Bill.
I would say 2-7 something. This feels like remembering like a lock that I don't remember.
Into pie. Like, I'm sorry, I
Yeah, I believe
stopped.
it was 2974. I believe it
Oh,
was
I was so
2974.
close. We were half.
Yeah,
We
very close. You
split
had just the numbers rearranged.
If the
But
price is right, I wouldn't
uh
win. Like when you have to pick where the number goes
yeah,
in the,
yeah.
you know, too bad.
Wah, 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 wah.
It happened in Madison Square Garden. He needed
Yes.
only two, so you knew it was going to happen. Obviously, everybody in the world was going to be there, including, of course, Pete Davidson. And then you had at the end, I mean, there's so many things going on there. I thought the reaction was great, first of all. I didn't think Steph would react that emotionally, that sort of, you know, surprised, if you will. I don't know if it was a surprise look, but he just really acted emotionally there. Had all the hugs. They stopped the game. I texted somebody and said they really are treating this like the home run record in baseball. And it seemed like a bit much at the time to me, but sort of thinking about it again, like, A, I thought Steph's reaction sort of made it a lot more interesting or a lot more, you know, willing to watch that because they're willing to let that happen because it was very joyous for him. It was something that he took very seriously. It was something that he, you know, cried about. And, you know, while we respect the game for what it is, it's also, you know, a regular season game in December. If it's delayed by 10 minutes, who cares? This is something that probably won't be broken for a long time, assuming Steph's career isn't riddled with injuries down the stretch of it. That's the other reason why I believe it's sort of worth that type of celebration. Because if it's going to be, let's just say, another 25, 30 years, another generation before we find, you know, another guy who could do this and do it for as well as he did for that long, then I think, you know, we should celebrate it for what it is. I just thought it seemed a little bit more over the top because of everybody else that was there and all the extras around MSG.
Agree. I think the inevitability of Steph breaking it would be the only reason we think it's too much. It's an incredible feat. It's just that we already decided so long ago that he was the greatest of all time at shooting and the three that we're like, wait, he didn't already have the record somehow, despite the fact that he did it in 500 fewer games, despite the fact that we know these stats like the one that's up there now. That's unbelievable. But we're so used to it by now that we're not really arguing with anyone. And that's what we like to do in this business, is find someone to disagree with so we can keep having the debate. And the debate over whether Steph is the greatest 3-point shooter of all time has long been over. So I think when we got to this, it was like, it's a counting stat. Of course he's going to have it. But that doesn't mean that it's not incredibly impressive. My only thing is, I am very torn on whether we should stop games for anything. I get it it's much more fun to celebrate in the moment. And it's very mm-hmm. weird at the end of a game, particularly when it's like the first few minutes of a game, like it was in this case, to then be like, all right, let's retroactively create the emotions that we were all feeling in the first quarter now that the game is over. But there is a part of me that's like, if you're on the opposing team, it's some bullshit when you have to be like, all right, congratulations, we get it, that's very impressive, but we're trying to win a game here, and it's part of our season, and there's billions of dollars that go into who wins however many number of these games. And I'm just wondering, like you said, Izzy, this regular season game, it was very early in the game, but what happens if one of these happens down the stretch of a really important game, like the Drew Brees or Tom Brady stop the game, to your point, you know, the home run chase, any of these? What if it's like 40 seconds on the clock, we're midway through a game-ending drive in the NFL, and it's like, everybody stop, Tom Brady did a thing again. And now a team has like an artificial timeout to plan. Like, do we have to decide beforehand? What are the stakes?
I think
what's the timing? Like, if this happens at this many minutes into the game, we don't do it, but if it happens before, we do. It's a lot.
Now, you guys know Ray Allen was the one who held this held this nod before this point. Steph Curry took it from Ray Allen. Do you guys remember where you were the day Ray Allen broke this streak or broke the record?
In so much as that I was in front of a television, yes, but I don't remember where that television was or where my person was, no.
Sarah, I have no recollection. I was living in Boston at the time where this happened, and I was not watching the game on television. I watched a fair amount of Celtics games at that time. You know, I feel like this is different. Like, I feel like we're taking a nod here that, like, is reflecting of the way the game has changed, right? Like, the NBA, you know, the three-pointer is a much bigger portion of the NBA than it was 15, 20, 30 years ago. And Ray Allen, of course, was on the, you know, cusp of that. It wasn't like he was from a different era, but Steph has changed the game so much in combination with analytics. Now, the bigger question I have for you guys, And Izzy, you brought this up and got me thinking, how is Pete Davidson in so many different places at so many different times? So we know Saddam Hussein 20 years ago had a series of body doubles positioned around different countries. Is it fair to at least wonder whether there's like 5 Pete Davidsons around just in case?
Crude joke about Pete Davidson having an inordinate number of something, and that relating to how many places he's been in.
I would never put your position eight that kind of joke, Sarah. It just feels like if you had to bet on who was going to be at this game. By the way, Dominique Foxworth, our colleague, was at this game, just showing off as well.
John Stewart, yes. I would have said Sudeikis with Pablo, of course, obviously, courtside. Desus and Mero. John Stewart, and then Spike. Probably would have said some Spike, of course. Pete Davidson, with or without Kim K, and then you know the usual sort of like usually the SNL folks travel together, although not always Pete. It's usually like you know Wig and Sudeikis and Cecily Wig. Strong or something. We're on a last name basis.
I would have guessed at least one Beastie Boy. I would have assumed would be there. You know, it just feels like it felt like this was like the Met Gala of basketball nerddom.
It definitely did. That brings me to my question, which is, if you had to think of a famous moment in sports history that has been captured in photos, maybe it's the you know Muhammad Ali shot. It could be you know Jordan from the free throw line. This Steph shot that we know one angle is Spike Lee, one angle is Pete Davidson, who by the way. Not a coincidence that he was wearing the world's brightest pink sweatshirt just in case he happened to be in the shot. But which one would you want to be in the background of so that every time they showed it, you can tell people that's me?
I'd probably want to be in that Michael Jordan one at Utah and Salt Lake City. I do think that sort of adds to this one.
I would go the free throw line, though, not Utah.
Yeah. You'd be in the distance though in that photo. Like you'd have to really like point out, like, "Oh, that's me."
Court, of course. Very excellent seats.
I definitely want the one where it's just like there's a game at hand, there's a championship involved, there's like a natural emotional reaction versus just you know waiting for him to finish that dunk. But I mean, it's a great year. I would say that
helicopter.
Ooh.
But you would be very hard to see, because football games, it's a lot harder to see the crowd.
That's very fair.
But Bill just, you know, he doesn't have that type of ego. Go ahead, Charlie.
A couple things. Three things, to be exact. First, one of the funniest photos of all time is Lil Dicky courtside. Incredible reaction to LeBron's block against the Warriors. He sees it before anyone else.
Amazing.
Second one. I actually just went back on YouTube and watched Ray Allen break the three-point record. Mm-hmm. He shook Reggie Miller's hand. They did not stop the game. And immediately on the next possession, Kobe posted him up and scored.
Oh, that'll happen.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Do you have a third thing there? Was that all three of them?
No, the third one is at age 31, James Harden actually has more threes than Steph Curry does. Is he the worst person that could break this record potentially?
Oh, no.
Brutal. Well, so listen to this. Well, Fascinating thing is Steph Curry did not start taking double-digit threes per game, I believe, until six seasons into his career. So as much as we think that this record is going to last forever, and it probably will still, because you still have to make them no matter how many you take, the idea that Steph started during an era where it was like 10% of shots were threes, and now it's 40-plus percent, means that there's a real opportunity for someone who is a fantastic three-point shooter in the same vein as Steph to best him just because of the virtue of the fact that they came into the league and from week one, they're getting to get those shots up.
This is why I find it more difficult to anticipate just, hey, because the game's changing and we have somebody that's great at it, that they're going to come in, you know, and shoot. I just don't think that they're going to be allowed to shoot that much that early. Like, I look at a guy like even Duncan Robinson from Miami, who was encouraged, hey, shoot it every time. If it's not blocked, it's a good shot for you. Even he's not getting to the point where it's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 makes a game, 12 attempts a game, right? And, you know, he's fallen off, obviously. And then, to me, it's going to take a few seasons, maybe 2 or 3, for a guy to be established and say, okay, you're good enough to take that many threes. We're going to encourage you to take that many threes, and then he's going to be good enough to where defenses can't stop him, where everything that Steph has done, and, you know, Steph has obviously had the benefit of being surrounded by other, not just great shooters, but great offensive players and a coach who know how to get him the ball in those positions. All those things have to align themselves for the course of a guy's career, because, as Charlie just mentioned, James Harden. Do you see James Harden being in any position again where he's taking 11, 12, 13, 14 threes a game regularly? No, not unless he goes to some team where he's going to be the man again, and that's probably not something he wants to do because it won't result in high level of winning. So I think, you know, by the time Steph is done, and this isn't going to be a situation where he's taking less threes per game as his career goes along. I think we just saw a card there that said it would be an NBA record for makes in it per game this year if he continues with this average. So I think he's so unique in that way and so great at it that it's combining. Not only has he changed the game, but the game was heading a little bit in that direction. He just sort of fast-forwarded it. All those things coming together sort of make him, I think, be capable of putting that to an unreachable, like, it's, they're still going to be, like, I thought Kareem's was unreachable for a while, and then, you know, LeBron comes in and changes everything, but that's the type of person it's going to take. It's not going to be, in my opinion, like, Trae Young, for example, because Trae, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but Trae is, like, definitely taking more twos and less of those long threes and realizing how quick he is and being able to get to the basket and stuff. So for you know, at least a generation, I think whenever Steph is done, that
for
record's
sure.
going to be
at least.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Now, let me ask you guys, like, I in terms of this three-point record being sort of like a thing we focus on more because the game has changed, is there a record, either in basketball, maybe in sports on the whole, where it feels like it mattered more 30 or 40 years ago than it would now if someone broke it? And so it's sort of like it should get less recognition and there should be less ceremony around it than there was 30 or 40 years ago?
Probably a fair number of those because of the changing numbers in that game. It's all home runs. It's all strikeouts. So like pitching stats, where you've got if you have a pitcher that lasts a long time, many innings, complete games, stuff like that, that's incredibly impressive in this era. But if you go for something like strikeouts, for me, that's not an impressive stat the same way it used to be.
Yeah, or like
although hits. What is the record for strikeouts in a game? Is it 20?
I believe it is 20.
It would, is it?
I thought he was tied.
I think he's tied with it still. And so, yeah, I mean, that's still, even in today's game with so many strikeouts,
seems like something. A specific game. More so like right. over the course record. Of a season.
Got it. Yeah. Oh, right.
In
right,
a
right.
game, that's still incredibly impressive. But like of a season or strikeout rate, stuff like that has lost its luster to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say passing yards in football, but not really, because yes, the game has changed into more of a passing game, but also we happen to have the best that have played it right now, like Tom Brady playing it and the you know, the longevity of his career. So I don't, it's almost a Steph Curry situation. Is somebody else going to be able to do it for that well for that right. long and match that, even though the game is
games,
changed?
Games, though, which helps. It's going to be that asterisk where eventually you say, oh, they did it. I mean, there was just this stat that made me want to die, and that was that the 1940s Sid Luckman Bears had more average yards on offense per game than the current Bears.
Wow.
Made me really think about time.
Life in general.
Yeah, and the amount of it I've spent watching the Bears.
I'm just picturing
all right, so last thing on this subject, though, before we get Sarah all depressed and stuff, your favorite non-basketball moment from last night in MSG? Because to me, like, I think it's got to be, you know, afterwards seeing some pictures of the night Dale Curry probably had, I think it, you know, made me think differently. But I think Spike Lee being everybody's, you know, relative on the floor taking pictures behind Steph Curry in that amazing outfit of his, I think that's got to be my favorite part, just because Spike is such a basketball fan and, you know, it's so Spike.
I would say the one frame of that one photo where a very nice, very complimentary Ray Allen just showed that tiniest bit of side eye towards Steph Curry. Like, yes, I think genuinely he is happy, but I respect the fact that in his heart, he is petty about this, and he should be. It's his record.
Queen
was
Steph and Myles Garrett talking and then realizing just how enormous Myles Garrett is, despite Steph being
insane.
An NBA player. I'm torn between that. I do like Del Curry and the fact that inevitably some girl later on that evening asked him about Tulum. But more importantly, it is inexplicably the Pete Davidson with the world's brightest sweatshirt. And he's tall right. enough and big enough that he's all the way down the court in the background. And he still completely steals focus from the guy who's just achieved this monumental thing.
People are always jarred when they recognize just how big NBA players are. So a small guy on the court, Steph Curry, looks exactly the same size as the most intimidating defensive lineman in the NFL right now. Yeah, that's kind of jarring.
Not the same size. The same,
same
height.
Same height. Yes.
There
same
was like
height.
Three
as somebody who does
Curry's
all of his
in
interviews like this, I get that. What else do we have, Charlie?
All right, moving on to our next topic. The question I have for you guys is, is it finally time for the NFL to do something serious about Daniel Snyder?
Ooh.
You know, it's maddening about this. So the Washington Post had a story about this, a great story, very detailed story. Mm-hmm. Highlights effectively being that Daniel Snyder tried to keep a woman who he had already settled a sexual assault case with a $1.6 or $1.9 million settlement, tried to then keep her from speaking to the investigator that was investigating the Washington football team and Daniel Snyder and everything else, and, you know, did more intimidating tactics by trying to figure out which employees spoke to reporters, sending private investigators to employees' houses without any warning and everything else. And the part that is very frustrating to me about this, Sarah, is what we're discussing here. We are talking about a sexual assault and multiple, if you talk about the entire...
Just right. misconduct has to be the word we use because we don't have
misconduct.
The specifics. Yeah.
Right. And what we are basically doing, and which is what we always do, is sort of creating arguments to get around the fact that, hey, maybe he should keep the team, maybe... Let's talk about what actually happened and what, or, you know, reportedly or allegedly happened, and what people are going to just be okay with if they decide, hey, this man is going to keep this team. And so I'll let you go for a minute, Sarah, because I know you have a strong opinion on this.
Yeah, I mean, the story from the beginning has been dragged out from way back when there were issues with cheerleaders years ago to accusations from over, you know, what is it now, 80-something former employees. It's hard to keep track. It's a lot of people. A lot of NDAs. There's so much smoke here that this entire facility is clearly on fire. And the NFL, for whatever reason, has been reticent to act. Now, that could be because other owners know that if you allow them to go looking in somebody's house, then you're going to come looking in mine. And unless we have something so definitive that you can point to that as cause to take the team away, we can't open the Pandora's box of allowing them to take away something from Snyder that if something were to come up in our backyard, you'd be able to do the same to us. There's also potential for Snyder knowing things about the league, Roger Goodell, other owners that could come out if there were a real investigation into this. We saw that happen recently with the Gruden situation where those emails were leaked. He now wants to sue the NFL. They will probably pay him a massive amount of money so that there is no discovery, because if there's discovery, everything related might come out, which could be damning for so many other people. Because you remember that the NFL somehow tried to tell us that in the hundreds of thousands of emails, it was just John Gruden and Bruce Allen who said some bothersome things. Nobody else said anything wrong the whole time. The secrecy here is the real issue, because the women involved have said, no, we want transparency. We want whatever you find in this investigation to be made public. And instead, the NFL is hiding behind the false idea that their privacy is paramount, when in fact, for whatever reason, they are choosing to protect Daniel Snyder and his reputation. And as this continues to go on, not only is it a miscarriage of justice for all the women who have spoken out and the employees who have said something here, but it's also an incredible embarrassment for the league. And I don't mean they're embarrassed or any of the owners are embarrassed, because at this point, it literally is impossible to embarrass these morally corrupt people. What I mean is it's a joke that any of us would not continue to hold their feet to the fire on this particular person and this particular franchise, which has been fraught with this for years and now has gotten to such a turning point that after this, there is nothing other than a continued asking of Roger Goodell and everyone else in the league why he still owns this team.
Yeah, Bill, they're basically just protecting each other, are they not?
Absolutely what it is. And I mean, we saw with Jerry Richardson in Carolina, where there was an investigation into conduct of Jerry Richardson in that building, which led him to sell the team to David Tepper. Absolutely. I mean,
Don't you wonder, Bill, how they managed to get that like this? Like, what else was in there that he was like, ah, let's just tell everyone I really like to rub feet, right? Like, and we'll just leave it at that, because there's got to be something in there. Otherwise, how did that go so smoothly if everybody else is now so reticent to move on Snyder?
It does seem very suspicious. And like you said, if there's smoke there, there's very clearly fire, based on the fact that they were not willing to go to discovery. They were not willing to go to a bigger case. They sold the team to avoid that happening. Literally, he was his statue was airlifted out of the stadium 2 days later after he sold the football team. And I mean, this is not anything new for this Snyder regime. I mean, they sued a Washington journalist, Dave McKenna, who worked for the Washington City Paper, with a frivolous lawsuit based on accusations which were accurate in the paper at the time. I mean, this organization has been blocking this investigation or hurting this investigation for years now. I mean, we saw the report in the Post today. I mean, we've seen just obstruction throughout this entire process. And then we've seen this organization do stuff elsewhere, unrelated to this incident, that have been awful. I mean, we saw Daniel Snyder's wife go on a podcast and talk about how this had affected the Snyder family, not the people who were actually harmed by this investigation. We saw the organization throw Scott McLuhan, their general manager, under the bus in the media for his drinking problems. I mean, there have been just so many issues with this organization. And there's no like football reason to do this. It's not like he's a great owner or they're a great organization. They suck. They're bad. Like, I live in Washington. There are so many fans here who are laughs because they don't want to support the product. They don't want to support a team that had that nickname. They don't want to support a franchise that basically treats them like they're third-class citizens. And this franchise not only does that to their fans, they also do that to the people who are employed by the organization.
Well, Sarah, you mentioned the word real quick. You mentioned morally bankrupt, and I just want to ask you what. So, in a time where it feels like anybody can get away with anything, unless there's video of it, and even in that case, maybe you can blame taking a sedative. You guys got to look that one up for yourself for that reference. People can either deny or they can flat out lie, and we are ignoring the morals part of it. And it's almost as if people just kind of dismiss it because, hey, this is what people get away with. This is the times we're in. Or they just don't really recognize the gravity of it because they haven't seen video or haven't heard audio or haven't seen somebody tearfully discuss it. So my question is, do you think that isn't that the only way we need to sort of have to fight, hold these people accountable, is to remind everybody, is to hammer home the point of what is actually, you know, allegedly happening to these women and what people are getting away with just on human behavior? Like, that's got to be what we really focus in on, rather than, you know, the business of sports or lawyers and this and this and that, because otherwise, you know, we can just get away with, you know, this, you know, talking in the margins and not actually what happened.
Of course. Now the details in this story are really important, because yet again, the idea that he said he would fully cooperate and then now is very clearly trying to prevent an investigation just further corroborates that there's guilt there, that there's things he's covering up. That includes offering more money to the victim, alleged victim of the 2009 incident. That includes suing the NFL investigator for attempting to use some of that information in the investigation. That includes all the lawsuits that he's bringing up against people that he can now claim that he thinks might be involved with the errant rumor about him and Jeffrey Epstein. And in doing so, he can ask for all of their emails and phone records, which he's then using to find out whether they're helping with this investigation. In fact, some of those people have been blocked by a judge because they've said, listen, there's no real way you can connect them to the Jeffrey Epstein stuff you're claiming. Mm-hmm. You're really just doing a fishing expedition to try to find people to point fingers at or intimidate. Mm-hmm. All of this matters because, of course, we know at this point, as we mentioned, there's so much going on there that it'd be impossible not to find Dan Snyder guilty at the heart of this. It's necessary, though, to point out the ways that he is very overtly trying to stop this, to yet again reinforce that we know he's at fault and that the NFL is covering for him. To your point,
at some point,
we do
though,
need to get
the
to the
owners.
We do need to get to the humanity of it, though, because, again, that is the thing that moves people. The only benefit is that Snyder's team sucks and he sucks as an owner, so he doesn't have people caping for him because they want to protect their beloved product. Like, if it's a Robert Kraft or if it's a very successful owner, oftentimes people will look past the morality because they want to defend this institution that's brought them all these wins and so much joy. The Washington football team hasn't done that for literally anyone, so there are not a lot of people defending him. And yet at the same time, there is such an exhaustion over the repeated moral failings of this league, whether that's Kaepernick, whether that's CTE, whether that's all those issues, that at this point, people sort of shrug and say, what do you expect? We're going to get some sort of, you know, moral center that's finally found from a league that repeatedly shows us it has none. It's like COVID. The exhaustion of it finds people no longer able to really look at the effects of it. And that includes being able to hear the stories of these women and the people that are involved and to remember that they're human beings and to remember what it would feel like to happen to you or your loved ones because we're so lost in the, this has been going on forever and shrug, nothing will happen.
But in the same way that there's implied guilt when, you know, Daniel Snyder has a settlement with an accuser, there is an implied sort of, hey, there are some things in my background, too, as an owner that I don't want out there. So therefore, I am not going to say something. I'm not going to be outspoken. I'm not going to say he should get rid of this team. And so if there aren't those cases, if there are multiple owners, not even most of them, but multiple owners who are confident that they don't have that in their background, they are almost, in my opinion, required to speak up about this, because then otherwise you're just doing it for, you know, a blood pact or something like that. Right. You're not doing it because you're protecting yourself. You're doing it to protect other people who have, you know, done wrong. And so, again, to answer the question, is it time for the NFL to do something? It's time for these owners to stand up and, yes, do something about this. And even if they do have a little bit of dirt in their past, sort of, you know, maybe speak up about it and say, hey, you know, I've worked on this, I'm trying to get past this, and maybe try to protect themselves individually. But as a group, this just seems like it's gone far too far for them to say, stay quiet and just support him.
I mean, Izzy, you know, you spoke about the video. I'm thinking about the Zach Stacy incident, which was horrific, captured on camera. And Zach Stacy came out this week and said, oh, it was staged. You shouldn't believe this woman because that video was staged. Like the absurdity that we're dealing with here of people just, you know, like the level of truth that is seemingly required, or the bar of evidence that is seemingly required for people to take these accusations or these allegations seriously with significant evidence behind them is just, it's scary to me that the bar keeps getting raised higher and higher and the goalposts keep getting moved. Like this is absurd at this point. And it's one thing. Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I mean, like it's one thing for like a anonymous player to have this happen, but this is an owner who has millions and millions of dollars to throw at lawyers, who has all this bureaucracy to throw in front of a possible case, and owners who are willing to cape for him. Like the fans are not willing to cape for him, but other owners seemingly are, and Roger Goodell seemingly is. And I feel like that's my concern, is that, you know, you have these people who just are not told no. NFL owners are not told no when it comes to anything. And now this is their just, oh, I can get away with whatever I want because even if I do something wrong, like I will just wait for the bureau to subside over, and then I will be fine.
But what you're saying in the other instances, and people are so unwilling to believe a lot of these, I don't think that's the case here. I don't think anyone other than, you know, the rogue Twitter moron who just doesn't ever believe women and is an incel, I don't think anyone is looking at the 80 plus or however many it is now, people who have made complaints and not believing that the culture there is toxic and awful. I just think the problem is the power structure is always going to lean toward the richest and the highest level. And so unless people above him, which there are very few, or his peers do something, that's where the buck stops, sort of. Yes, Alabaster.
Bill, I have a question for you about this.
Yes.
Why do the other owners protect him at this point? I mean, this is sort of what the NBA realized with Donald Sterling, and, you know, it's a reckoning that's come before in sports. Why is the NFL so tight about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Sarah's point, the idea that, you know, the skeletons in my own closet prevent me from, you know, attacking somebody else or saying that someone else's behavior is wrong. And I want to be clear, like, I do not believe that every single NFL owner is someone who, if they were investigated, would be found to be a creep and would need to lose their team. I don't believe that is the case. But I'm willing to believe that there are at least some owners who have had that happen or who have to worry about that. And as a result, I feel like, you know, there is that fear of, oh, if I turn on this owner, then the owners will eventually turn on me for something, and that will happen to me as a result. So I feel like that is why there are these concerns about that owners are not turning on this sort of rogue, awful person.
The disappointing part is that it's going to take, you know, maybe us or just somebody continuously harping on it, because it could just die into the background. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few years go by and you recognize, okay, this guy's going to stay right where he is. And so I don't know, to answer the question, I don't know if this is the tipping point. I don't think it is.
I think it's a continue too, because what you need is that smoking gun. And to your point, I do think that's why the owners aren't doing something. They need something like what we saw with Donald Sterling that makes it a cut and dried black and white case, wherein you don't have to dig much deeper, and then the finger can't be pointed, oh, you have the same thing. It's, no, we don't. We don't have this specific accusation or video or audio or whatever it is. It clearly should be the bulk of all of this, should be more than enough. But I think in the case of the owners protecting him or not wanting to act, it's because they need that one thing that is so brutal and so over the line that can be an easy cause for taking the team.
I mean,
not that I'm trying to switch subjects, but as soon as Bill's done, we should probably play a game.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, like, you know, I imagine that people around the NBA had heard the rumors about Donald Sterling before that story officially broke, no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, not only that, but it just other issues he's had in the past, just not that specifically, and obviously the audio helped bring light to everything.
Right.
All right, guys, it is time for Whodunit, a segment where we give you quotes. You guys come together, have a minute, and tell us whodunit. First one. I hadn't lost until I got here. First 18 years of life, 19 years of life. Every step that I played basketball, I was winning something. I don't know how you do that. Make it to the NBA, and now you just don't care about winning. Everybody talks about how you get paid, blah, 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 blah. And your choices are De'Aaron Fox, Karl-Anthony Towns, Jalen Suggs, or Cade Cunningham.
Wow. So two of those are youngins, as Jalen Suggs and Cade Cunningham.
Yep.
Cat and De'Aaron Fox have been in the league for a minute, but they've both been on bad teams. Yep. And you would assume that, you know, maybe there are some people that don't care about winning in those. This is a tough one.
Have they been around long enough that they already would have said this, or do they feel empowered to say this because now they've been around long enough that they can look around
and
those
two
and be
rookies,
frustrated.
Suggs and Cunningham, are on bad teams. Cunningham of the worst.
Suggs,
I'm
going to
go with Cade Cunningham.
Suggs just lost last year, but it was in the finals, so I guess that counts as enough winning to, like...
Yeah, I would rule him out.
I mean, I think that's what they mean by that, sure.
It may be, too, because he's the one who, especially at the beginning of the season, was under such criticism for a slow start. So maybe he's more likely to be vocal about the situation being tougher than he thought.
I don't think it's Kat, because I feel like Kat, like they're at least, like, plausibly on the right track, but I don't think you say him.
All right, I think we're going with D, but I have a feeling we're wrong because Oklahoma State wasn't that great. Let's see what happens.
Okay. I mean, I hadn't lost until I got here. So, for 18 years of life,
this is so bleak.
19 years of life, every step that I played basketball, I was winning something.
Yes.
So, I don't know how you do that, make it to the NBA, and then now you just don't care about winning.
It's like this, like, thousand-yard stare.
You know, if you get paid, blah, blah, blah.
It's an Urban Meyer
Nobody
stare.
Likes to lose.
So let me ask you guys.
What level you're on.
Calling out other people, or do you think he's saying that I, as an individual, like, you know, nobody likes
to lose? I think he's calling out other people. I think he's been in this organization long enough.
It doesn't sound like it.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's... So you're suggesting what? That he's saying that it's not true that people are...
Because it's this point where he says, I don't know how you do that, make it to the NBA, and now you just don't care about winning. It could be him saying, I don't know how you can expect me not to be frustrated every single night knowing that I came from a place where I was winning. Mm-hmm. Versus
maybe that's what
I first thought, which was, I don't know how my teammates could show up and not care. I think he's talking about himself.
Yeah, I agree. Hmm. And I mean, I just feel like this is what Sacramento does to people. Not the city itself, but just this organization does that to people. Like, we can never know, right, like, how a player would have done if they'd gone to a different organization. But I feel like this could easily be Luka Doncic or Trae Young in the same situation instead of Marvin Bagley, where it's just, you know, that just sullenness of just, like, this is what my lot in life is. Like, I didn't choose this for myself. It was chosen for me. And, I mean, I think the other depressing thing about all this is that, like you know, you think about a team like the Thunder, and they're an asset management company. They're not a basketball team at this point. The Rockets are kind of just like sleeping off a couple bad decisions they made, like they were drunk. Like they're just going to, you know, kind of be just half awake for a couple of years. They're hungover. Eventually, they'll be fine.
They'll be all right.
Exactly. Get them some Tylenol and Taco Bell. They're going to be okay. The Kings are like, they're trying to be good. Like they're trying to win. De'Aaron Fox is actually a good player. And it's just like something is preventing them from actually accomplishing anything, and has for like 15 years now. It's so depressing.
Before recent years, yes. It's like the Mets. It's like, what did you do in a previous life that has resulted in you being incapable of happiness? Yeah.
I think you're right, Sarah. I think he's basically saying, I don't know how people can say that about players, that all of a sudden they get to the NBA and they don't care about winning. De'Aaron Fox cares so much about winning that he got really nervous and choked on the free throw line the other day, missed two free throws, and they lost that game. So clearly,
like
if he didn't care, if he didn't know,
need that from you right now.
If he didn't care, he wouldn't have been that nervous and missed those free throws. Am I right?
Really interrupt this. This is harsh. This
okay,
is too
I got
much
something
for me.
That might be more harsh, though.
This
is one of the potential destinations for Ben Simmons. Can you imagine those press conferences in Sacramento?
Oh, God.
I mean, look, I honestly think if you bring in somebody who has won at a high level or a decent level, it can probably alter a franchise like that. But no, I probably wouldn't do that. I mean, for Ben, it wouldn't be the worst place in the world because you're not going to pay as much attention to him if, you know, things are not going well for him. But with Sacramento, like, I do think that the losing for that period of time can sort of make you look around and say, well, is the organization trying as hard as I feel like I should be trying? Because all these other teams seem to be making it in the playoffs. Half the league makes it in the playoffs. We haven't made it in, what, 15 years? Mm-hmm. So I think that can sort of suck the life out of you and the competitiveness out of you in some cases. Fortunately, I think what we're seeing here is De'Aaron Fox is not one of those people.
Yes. Can I point out just how dire of a situation this is, just based on what Sarah said, which is 100% accurate? Sarah said, oh, the Kings are like the Browns before things got better for them. The situation where the things got better for the Browns is literally the second year in a row they've had a COVID outbreak in their building. That is like what the Kings are aspiring to get to is, oh, maybe we can get to the playoffs and have the novel coronavirus.
Not having a head coach.
Yes, our head coach is in the basement not watching the game because he can't bring himself to watch the game. That's what the Kings have to look forward to, look up to in the years to come.
Did the Browns not win without their head coach in the wild card? And
they won without their head coach.
They won, right?
And
that's what I mean.
In the next round, yeah. So yeah,
and
so
many
the Kings
fans would argue that they're probably better without Baker right now. So maybe this is a plus for them.
Youch. Moving on.
Right, we got one more quote.
What else do we have?
We got one more quote for you guys. Micah Parsons has started to have a heck of a career, but when you're talking about the best defensive player in the history of this league, Lawrence Taylor, slow down a little bit. And your choices are Joe Judge, Bruce Arians, Ron Rivera, or Mike McCarthy.
Who would be approached
right?
to this?
Oh, I don't know, because Joe Judge would not be able to say this long of a sentence without talking about blue collar or some kind of grit or like some like patronizing thing to pretend he's not a rich person. So let's rule Joe Judge out. I think.
Amazing.
It's got to be C or D, right? C because they just played him, but probably just his own coach. Is anybody calling him Lawrence Taylor yet? Did I hear that somewhere? Or?
Everybody is saying he's the best defensive player since Lawrence Taylor, which very clearly makes it that Lawrence Taylor is better. Otherwise, you'd have to pass Lawrence Taylor to get back to another great rookie defensive player. So everybody, yeah, lots of people saying he's the MVP. A lot of people saying he's the best rookie defensive player since Lawrence Taylor. But no one's saying he's better. Head.
First off, what does Dominique Foxworth know about football? Let's leave this person out.
Oh.
Number two, so the reason they're comparing him to Lawrence Taylor is that Lawrence Taylor was the last rookie, I believe, to win Defensive Player of the Year. I am going to go with C, Ron Rivera, because Ron Rivera was the defensive coach.
No. Okay. I think we should trust Bill, Izzy. This is his job.
Let's hear it. All right, we're going with C.
Okay.
There have been a lot of comparisons made recently about Michael Parsons and Lawrence Taylor.
Bill.
I can see the smile on your face. Should we be making that comparison?
Well, I don't think so yet. I mean, he's started to have a heck of a career. But when you start talking about the best player to ever play defense in this league, slow down just a little bit.
Can we
say that for some reason? I don't know why. I just felt like Bruce Arians would be like chatting about this.
Can we check out Bruce Arians' drip for a second? Can we go back and see what he was wearing?
Yeah, he's got that like short sleeve over the long sleeve, like, and of course the signature hat. It's a little Belichickian. Do you think that Tom Brady's rubbing off on him?
I feel like he is, but he still has the Kangol though. I feel like he's dressed to like be like the hoodlum at a golf course.
He's a gaffer? Is that what they're called? What am I thinking of? Never mind. My brain.
I don't know.
I'm worried that's not appropriate.
I'm curious though, like Bill, haven't there been like some sort of standout rookies or young players who have just sort of taken the league over, taken by storm? Isn't like a Bosa recently was one of those guys? Like, I feel like Micah Parsons is sort of making that jump to this Lawrence Taylor conversation because of those rookie stats, but also because he's a Cowboy.
100%. And I mean, to be fair, Lawrence Taylor probably made that jump because he was a Giant, right? He was playing in the biggest media market in the country. And like, Micah Parsons is a fantastic football player, and he's fantastic in a way that I think we weren't really expecting coming into the season. I mean, he was a guy who was going to be a off-ball linebacker. They put him at edge rusher because they were desperate, and he also happens to be like one of the best three or four edge rushers in all of football. And I think what like on like a more like nuanced level, like Lawrence Taylor changed the game, I think, in a way that would be hard to change the game today, because football is just a different kind of game. But what Micah Parsons can do is that so many teams in the NFL run this sort of
They
shoot three-pointers. No, like the three-pointer in the NFL is like this boot concept. Like the corner three of the NFL is this boot concept that the Browns run, the Vikings run, the Niners run. So many teams run where it's, you know, you're leaving that end guy on the line of scrimmage totally unblocked, and you're trusting your quarterback to either hand it off and that your running back's been able to run away from that guy, or the quarterback's going to run around him. And the problem is, we saw in the Washington game, Micah Parsons is such a great athlete that you can't leave him unblocked for even a second, or he's going to annihilate your quarterback and eat him alive. And I feel like we're going to see more players in that role where they have to change what the offense can get away with because that guy is too tough to leave unblocked even for a second. There's just not a lot of guys on the planet who are that dangerous in the way that Micah Parsons is.
He's already that talented physically, and then you're going to insult him by not blocking him. I think you're probably going to get the worst of Micah Parsons in that situation.
Exactly.
He's also getting a lot of attention because of the Cowboys, whose defense needed to make a big overhaul, and who weren't expected to have taken this much of a leap, and because they get so much attention. Also, I'd like to point out that a gaffer is the head electrician on a movie set, and he absolutely looked like a gaffer. I don't know if that's what my brain was doing, but I'm going to say that it was.
Did you say something about golf when it comes to that, or did I just think golf when
golf,
you said gaffer?
And I said gaffer, which might be me thinking of Caddyshack, a golfer. Anyway, the point is he looks like a gaffer.
It kind of looked like Bruce Arians was cosplaying as Dan Patrick, and Dan Patrick was cosplaying as Bruce Arians in that video, which I respect.
Wonderful. All right, we got one more game, and that is What Are the Chances? Where we'll give you a topic. Sometimes with the video, and you'll tell us the chances. All right, first one. What are the chances Kevin James will do a good job playing Sean Payton?
Goodness.
Let's go.
We're gonna.
Oh my God! He just looks like Kevin James with a headset on.
Netflix put out a tweet that said he is unrecognizable.
What?
Playing, yes.
No.
Said he is unrecognizable, and it just looks like Kevin James with a hat. So I don't really understand how that's unrecognizable. I don't know about the acting part because I'm not gonna, you know, dog this guy for his acting ability. But in terms of looks. All I see is Kevin James with a headset and a hat. That's it.
Jared Leto in House of Gucci. Unrecognizable? In what way? Unrecognizable as Sean Payton? Sure.
And that he's not funny in this movie? Maybe that's unrecognizable because he's normal.
Because it's Kevin James. Oops, I said the one word we're not allowed to say.
Oh, my God.
I'm that irate about this.
Wow, the card was ready. The card was already ready. Okay, here's what I'm going to say.
The card was ready before they came up with the show concept, by the way.
Right, that was the first thing they prepared. Like, sometimes I feel like they, like you'll have, like, a title for a movie, and that'll be such a good title that you'll have to write the movie to justify the title. Yeah. It feels like this show exists because they had a Sarah Pusey.
Number one concern, yes.
Now, here's what I would say. Like, let's be honest here. Everyone thinks about, okay, if they were going to make a movie about my life, who would play me? Nobody. In the history of the planet, has ever thought, ooh, you know who I would like to play me in this movie? Kevin James. Mm. And that's not, I feel bad for Kevin James. That's not his fault. Mm. But you feel like, okay, maybe like Seth Rogen.
You always want to glow up. You want to glow up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You never want, like, you don't want to go a step down and be like, yeah, I want that guy to play me. Like,
all
Kevin
blart.
James. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about a guy who's been a mall cop, a guy who has been an MMA fighter in a movie.
A schlubby husband.
Man. A schlubby husband, or schlubby retired husband in like four different things. And his probably his best role, a friend of Adam Sandler. And I have to admit, if they had cast someone else, they had cast someone who was more like Sean Payton, I would be less interested in watching this movie. I'm much more interested in watching this because it is Kevin James inexplicably as Sean Payton.
Sarah, you've got a better Rolodex of like actors and stuff, but who could have played him? That just made more sense.
We played this game a long time ago on my radio show when they first announced this. Spain and Fitz, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. We played this game when they first announced it, and we ended up getting submissions for every single coach in the NFL, and they were really good. Some people were super spot on. Unfortunately, I can't remember a single person that people suggested for Sean Payton.
Oh, that memorable show. I'm going to go with 50%.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have to do all the acting to make up for the fact that they didn't really help him much with the casting.
Now, are we taking into account whether this is a good movie or whether he just does a good portrayal? Because why are we watching this? What's it even about?
So it's about
that one Super Bowl I was at.
No, it's not the one Super Bowl you're at. I thought maybe it was. It was, I believe it's the year he was suspended from the NFL.
The bounty
game. He had to go back and coach his child's, like, sixth grade popular team.
That sounds very Adam Sandler. Mm. So is it going to be Adam Sandler-y and absurdist? Is it going to be like the movie he already did where the guys... what's the movie with Ditka's, the cameo, and the coach, and the kicking and screaming? Is that what it's called?
Not The Water Boy?
Not familiar.
There's not familiar. A movie, and I think it's a Sandler one, and I think maybe Ferrell or somebody is like a high school coach and they have bad temper and then Ditka shows up.
This is literally, this is like Adam Sandler Mad Libs. Like you're just filling in like nouns and verbs. Here's what I would say. I would say like 45%, but what I want to know is this. Like everyone read that Jeremy Strong profile, like method acting is so big in the news. I need to know, did Kevin James go to Atlanta and beat the Falcons? If he did, for that method acting purpose, then I'd give him a 75% chance. If not, I would drop down to 25%. The middle is somewhere around 45%.
You said everybody wrote that or read that New Yorker article. It was a long one. Like, I'm about still two-thirds of the way through it and haven't finished it, okay? I'd like to raise mine to 51% because now that I realize that he's dealing with a bunch of sixth graders in this, I think it makes a little bit more sense to have.
I don't think I can accurately make a number selection here unless I know how much time Kevin James has spent with Taysom Hill. Does he think that Taysom Hill is a starting quarterback in the league deserving of money that literally no one else in the world thinks he is? Is he... Like Sean Payton himself, to quote Pablo Torre and Bill Barnwell from a recent ESPN Daily, is he someone who sees Taysom Hill as one of the $2,000 massage chairs in a Brookstone catalog that you just have to have, and then once you buy it and pay for it and realize it's not the thing you wanted, you still have to convince everyone you use it all the time and it's great. Is he someone who would subscribe to the idea that Taysom Hill's nickname should be Sky Mall? Because if not, I don't think he can really get to the soul of the character.
Here's what I'm going to ask. If this movie does well, does Kevin James play Taysom Hill in the sequel?
I mean, I feel like Taysom Hill gets a bad rap just for being a versatile athlete. Like, he can do so many things just because he's not the actual quarterback.
A bad rap in the form of an exorbitant contract that he's never deserved.
I'll take a bad rap like that any day.
You want to pay me a bunch of money because you think I could be something I'll never be? I'll take it.
That's why I work for ESPN.
By the way, stay out of my mentions.
I feel like it's
Twitter.
More of a Sean Payton thing than it is a Taysom Hill thing.
It's already happening.
Sarah, come on! Come on!
I don't think
That's
I've cursed.
Not even a swear.
I don't think I've cursed yet on this
That's
show.
Not even a swear.
All right, that next one. Oh, this is the same one.
I was going to say, what's the next one?
We printed out the wrong card, so we're just going to move on to something else.
Too many producer interventions. Three in the show alone. I feel like Alabaster got distracted, a little cocky, and was not paying attention.
Forgot to print something out.
Yep. So we do have a bonus topic, though. And this one comes from Jack.
I bet you I know what it was, by
the
way.
I'm playing a game where I drink every time Izzy mentions flag football, and I'm completely sober. Step it up, guys.
See, Charlie? It's not always
Izzy,
me.
Izzy, are you
who
out of season, though? Is that why?
Yeah.
Yes, technically I am. However, if we want to mention flag football just for fun, my partner Anthony had a game last night that I skipped so that I can watch Steph Curry. And after he hit his second three, I was like, man, I definitely should have gone to that game. I did not want to watch the rest of this.
Wait, so how come your partner?
So there's your flag football
season,
reference.
And you're not. Is there like an extra season
It's a different
for
league.
Better players?
It's, oh, wow. Wow. Ooh. It's a different league, and if you want to get very specific, I just happen to have a little downtime because of a facial injury that I had recently, so I've sort of like giving my legs a break from the football field and more just kind
my
of
my doctor said I shouldn't participate in anything that has balls flying at my nose. Well, there goes your social life. What movie?
I don't know.
Clueless.
I just thought that was something you were just saying to Izzy. And
I was
like,
gonna go with Izzy A.
That's in line with what's happening on the show. Izzy, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If there was a movie producer who came to you and said, we have this great idea, we're going to film this like quasi-reality show, Kevin James is going to manage your flag football team.
Ooh.
Would you let him do it? Are you so competitive? Are you so competitive that you would not let him manage your flag football team?
No, I will allow it just to show everybody else how good of a manager I am. So, you know, somebody else tries to do it and everybody's all fighting and Kevin James isn't really good at his job, they'll be crying for Izzy after that.
Wow, that's so manipulative. I love it.
It's really just about making you look good in the long run.
All right, guys, fair. I'm going to leave
and
you
for
this.
The record. Yes.
Izzy, you crushed it today.
Look at
two
you.
2 of 4 for the Izzy checklist.
Wow. Did you say 2 of 4?
Now we're at 3.
Put it on
four.
The board.
Oh, there it is. Right. All right. And
wait,
I won't go.
And
you have a checklist
Florida
for my
Gators.
Swears?
Let's get that graphic. You mentioned Florida Gators just before we started, too.
Oh, didn't make the cut, though. That was pregame.
You came extremely close.
Doesn't
extremely
count. Close I just got it out of my system before we turned.
Close to a perfecta.
Extremely close.
When did I mention heat part. Culture, though?
Duncan Robinson.
The next Steph Curry.
Oh, man.
Let me just pull up.
Why didn't I think of somebody else?
Nowhere specific. It just happens to be Duncan Robinson. For instance, for example, let's just go with Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, the only player I can.
Well, I hope Jack Oliver is just a little bit more drunk than he was 15 seconds
Cheers,
ago.
Cheers, Jack. Also, two first names. Suspect.
Two first names
that
and
is two first names.
Drinking at some time, probably between 10:20 and 1:20.
We don't judge around
day.
Here, Bill. Bill.
Well, I
Bill,
mean, we talked.
Don't judge
we talked
around
about
here.
We talked about
Sarah. What's on the desk
yesterday? Might as well just keep going.
Is it some sort of a light-colored claw?
On what?
Bye, everyone.
I missed what you said. What's on the what?
I said, what's on the desk?
Yes.
Some kind of flaw.
Black cherry, baby.